Off the Ball, GAA.
I mean, Jimmy's been incredible. Jimmy's, nobody has managed Cork more than Jimmy. And as you know, sure, he's the most, you know, he's the most adored person in Cork GAA, and I would say the most adored person in Cork sport.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster Rugby. Never stop competing.
We are looking at weekend two of the Women's Rugby World Cup. In terms of the main contenders and the general wisdom out there seems to have that down as England, Canada and New Zealand. England are playing Samoa at 5 o'clock on Saturday. Canada are playing Wales at 12 noon on Saturday. And then at 2 p.m. on Sunday, it's New Zealand versus Japan. That, of course, is in Ireland's pool and Ireland are playing Spain once again in Northampton at 12 midday on Sunday. Happy to say that Victoria Rush of All 80 Rugby is with us on the line. Victoria, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Excited and busy, as I'm sure you'd expect in the middle of a World Cup, but it's been a brilliant first kind of 10 days already.
Yeah, I was going to ask, where does the first weekend sit? Because there's obviously been some amazing rugby played, but much like the Men's World Cup, quite often the stick that's used to beat Rugby World Cups with is the fact that there are many, many mismatches early in a tournament.
Yeah, there have been, obviously, you know, the opening match was fantastic for all of the viewing figures and the numbers for the game, but the Red Roses did quite convincingly beat the USA, and there's been a few of those kind of results. But more than anything, it's been the mentality for someone like Brazil, for example, who are playing in their first ever Rugby World Cup, men's and women's, and just crowds turning up to support women's rugby in general. So, yeah, I think if you want to look at it from a numbers perspective, the viewing figures for the first week weekend alone outrank that of the entire tournament in 2021. So we're already a record-breaking tournament and we're 1 week out of six so far. So yeah, it's set to be a pretty brilliant five more weeks.
For sure. And given what we've been hearing on the ground from Franklin's Gardens last Sunday, this is a real moment for these Irish players where they may not have played in anything quite like what they experienced against Japan last weekend. And I presume that's something that every team has to contend with over the course of these few weeks. Particularly England. Now, I know England have played Twickenham in the last couple of years, so maybe they're more battle-hardened for these sorts of massive occasions. But as hosts and as World Cup favourites, there's an expectancy on them as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's kind of almost the big question of the tournament. Do the Red Roses make it to the final at Twickenham? Do we? I mean, we have sold out the final, really, at this point. So does the final sell out? And then do the Red Roses win? That it's a lot of pressure. It comes down to whether or not the team can handle that. There's been a lot of talk out of the camp about how they're really relishing it, not seeing it as pressure, but an opportunity, which is great. I guess you have to, right? But it's a big tournament after what happened in New Zealand, lost in the final, lost the line out that would have been a convincing driving maul to win the tournament. Now we're back at home 3 years later and looking at potentially gunning down a home final at Twickenham, sellout crowd, you know, 82,000 at home. All the numbers are there. So it's a really big opportunity for the game. And obviously the players themselves kind of putting their names into history, but also what it can mean for the women's game in general, I think.
What is the general approach that you think teams are going to need to make over the next 2 weeks in particular, teams that have designs on winning the competition? So I see England have made a host of changes for the Samoa match. That there's been a bit of debate here with regards to how Ireland approach the New Zealand match. Should they beat Spain this weekend? It kind of feels that the general wisdom is that you're going to need to give your frontliners 1 week off, because going 4 weeks in the bounce is going to be a difficult ask to make a semi-final.
Yeah, big ask, isn't it? But again, if you're a player, you want to play, right? It's going to be hard to find any player out there that wouldn't want to be picked, no matter who the opponent is. Do you say, I need the time against a brilliant nation like New Zealand? They did beat them in the WXV last year, so we know Ireland have what it takes in the locker to go all the way in that match. So does that mean you play that team? You go for those points, even though you theoretically have qualified by that point? Or do you give some players a chance, some players a rest, and make sure you're kind of fighting fit, I suppose, for the knockout stages? It's tough, but like you say, the Red Roses have done the same. They've made, I think, 13, if not more, changes going into this weekend against Samoa. So I think it's quite normal for any dominant team to give their ringers some game time and also make sure they've got their combinations right. So it makes sense, I think, to mix it up against Spain and then potentially put out one of your stronger sides against the New Zealand, for example.
it's a really interesting one for Ireland, because if it was England, they would just rest all the frontliners against Spain this weekend because England's second team would beat Spain. But obviously, the Irish have this PTSD of going up against Spain and essentially missing out in the last World Cup because they couldn't beat Spain. So they definitely cannot afford to take their foot off the gas this weekend. So it comes down to this ridiculous situation of, do you play your first team against the Black Ferns or not? Like, I would personally argue that you have to go out and try and beat New Zealand, because it's probably going to be the difference between playing France or Italy. And if you manage to top that pool and get Italy, I guess Ireland will be slight favourites for that game. But it also means they'd be on the other side of the draw to England, who I believe are the only team that Ireland probably cannot beat in this competition.
Yeah, I think that's quite fair to say. And if they do go up against an Italy, they're straight through to a semi-final. Well, it's never straight through, right? It's always a question mark. But
a better chance than a France.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly that. So they've got more of a chance to get through to the semi-final. Don't want to say get a little bit further than the boys. it had to be done. But we'll see. I think if it was me and I was out there playing, and you say you'd put your strongest team up against New Zealand because you know you can, it's been done in less than 12 months' time. So why aren't you going out there and doing absolutely everything possible? And then, like you say, for Spain, maybe you've got a few of your front runners and your best picks on the bench just in case there's a bit of a wobble by the 60 minutes. But I think if it was me, I'd be going all out no matter what.
I think,
I'm not a coach. That's
I think maybe New Zealand last week is a good guide. It's just a reminder that you can hammer a team and you can also get a heap of injuries. Like, it's just the nature of the game. New Zealand finishing the match against Spain with 13 players was slightly farcical, but you don't need to be up against a top nation, a top three, top four nation to get injuries. New Zealand proved that point last weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I think New Zealand said up after the match, the head coach said they've been practicing with 14 and 13 players in case situations like injuries and cards, because they do happen, come along and there isn't another option. So they were kind of pretty well prepared, I would say, for that eventuality. And I think it's something that's quite a smart place to put yourself. So, yeah, you never really know what's going to happen. And like you say, you don't want to lose, and not this early in the tournament. You don't want to lose some of your best players. But you see with New Zealand, they did bring out the Portia Woodmans, etc., in the second half and gave everybody a little bit of a run around. And when you see them up against some of the newer sides in the tournament, for example, you can really see the difference in the quality of the game.
Is the general idea that New Zealand, I guess, gear up particularly for the World Cup and don't really care too much about the other 3 years of the year, is that true in your opinion? Like, even in terms of like talent acquisition and allowing players to spread their wings in the seven sphere before bringing them into the 15s, again, just looking at a couple of very a low number of examples, you'll be able to fill us in here. It does seem that they're bringing their sevens players almost into the 15s mix later than other countries would do. They let them play a little bit longer at sevens, and then when it comes to the World Cup time, they bring them in. Is that true? And do New Zealand really exemplify the idea that this is a once every 4 years thing to go after?
I think that's really tough to say. I mean, they have such a strong sevens side, a lot like Australia do. They bring a lot of their sevens players over as well. They're so strong that some of these guys could walk into a 15s team, as Porsche Woodman has done. You know, you could almost look at, say, like an Anton Dupont, for example. He almost walked into that Olympic sevens side. So I don't know if it's fair to say they brush aside 15s in the 3 years in between. Maybe potentially they actually don't have as many games lined up. Like, we have the Six Nations, but in the Southern Hemisphere, the women don't play the Rugby Championship, which I guess would be your closest tournament to kind of rival that for them. So they play a lot less games in general still, which I think will change now as the game's getting bigger and the coverage is getting bigger. They will end up having more games, and it's likely more of a heritage piece where the Red Roses have done it, obviously, with the Irish Sevens team. Your women's Sevens team is still a development point for your 15 squad. So really, I think that's just a part of the history of where the women's game's been, is that a lot of nations have gone, right, we've got in 2 years' time, we've got a World Cup, so we'll focus on 15s. When that tournament's finished, 2 years later, you've got a Sevens tournament, and then they kind of shift focus to that and cycle through. But I think that's probably something that we're going to run out of speed for when, as the game gets bigger.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. You'd wonder what New Zealand are thinking. Are they thinking to themselves, well, South Africa are bound to get good eventually, and we'll wait for that moment, and a women's rugby championship will finally get us up to speed, or what way do they need to go about this, I wonder?
Yeah, it's a good question, because there isn't really a women's Argentina side yet that's broken through. So potentially you've got like a Brazil, for example. The women's games landscape is just different. You do have some of the nations that are similar to the men's game, but you've got the likes of Canada, for example, that's a leading nation in the women's game that's kind of non-existent in the men's still. And with the USA, the women's team is technically far bigger than the men's. So it's hard to say maybe it should mirror the men's tournament, but why couldn't it be Australia, New Zealand and Fiji, for example? Might even be slightly easier to put that kind of tournament together for the women's game and give them more 15s game time. I think there's appetite for that now. The Super Pacific down and the Southern Hemisphere is bigger for the women's teams now as well. So I think it'll come part and parcel as the game gets bigger and the investment gets bigger. All those kind of international tournaments will come together.
When I talk about the 7s to 15s pathway in New Zealand, Georgia Miller is certainly somebody that I'm thinking about. She was Team New Zealand's youngest female gold medalist at last year's Olympics. And as everyone knows, New Zealand had an amazing Olympic Games in Paris. Was it always the case that she was just going to hop on board with the 15s this year in a World Cup year? Is that just how things happen?
Oh, it's hard, isn't it? Because if you look at Lone Mar, for example, she's gone into the 15 side too. I think if you're a good rugby player and you're fit enough as a back, especially, you probably do have plenty of the transferable skills into sevens. Georgia Miller looks like she's setting herself up to be another sort of once in a generation talent. She has, I would say, walked into that team, but she's and a phenomenal athlete, and I'm sure there's a lot of effort in the background that's gone into it's not as simple as just walking in, is it? But yeah, she looks like she's going to be a name we're going to hear for a long time coming in the future, especially as this is her first World Cup. How many more would we see her in? Because I think potentially she'll be sticking around that 15s team for a long time.
Yeah, she was looked absolutely sensational anyway, and probably the first of many that we're going to see. Are New Zealand going to be a little bit damaged by what happened against Spain in the last round in terms of injuries? Are things going to clear up? Are they going to be okay? Or is there a slight cause for concern?
Yeah, I guess you could say it's a slight cause for concern. One of the injuries in particular did look particularly bad, but they have both been cleared, which is always great to see. Obviously, you don't want to see any horrendous injuries. It just means that after round one, they're already down to potential selections. So yeah, that'll always damage a team no matter which way you look at it. It changes your combinations, it changes the way you set up your play. So I suppose for Ireland, hopefully, I guess it does create some opportunity and some weaker spots that may not have been there before. But I would say New Zealand, the Black Ferns have a history, or New Zealand do, but the Black Ferns have a history of really showing up in World Cups. So even with a few injuries under their belt, I wouldn't write them off at any point.
Certainly not. For England then, the Zoe Aldcroft injury, how significant is this going to be?
Yeah, pretty significant, to be honest. I think there's a few real kind of linchpins to that Red Roses team, but I think Zoe, at the end of the day, is captain. So any weakness from that position in the squad is possibly why she's being rested this week. because she's not been selected. But again, they've put a second team out today. So they have space to put other players in to give them game time, give them World Cup time. I guess they'll rest her and see what happens. I think that's probably the kind of footing on that one.
Any chance that she's going to miss a quarterfinal?
Oh God, you hope not, don't you?
Yeah, it's
that isn't where we'd want to be. Yeah, like you say, if she's out for all the pool stages, I guess it depends who we'd face in that first round of the quarterfinals.
Yeah,
and I can't think who that would possibly be to start with, but. Look, the team is strong enough. You've got Meg Jones and you've got Marley Packer, who was previous captain anyway. So I don't think it'd be too difficult for her to slot back into that that position as captain. It'll be quite interchangeable. Just, I think, there will be obviously eyes on getting Zoe back on the field in those knockout stages where it really is crucial to have your leader on the pitch, as we all know.
Yeah. Could I ask you about last Friday night at the Stadium of Light? I presume you were there and soaking the whole thing in. All the different factors at play here, knowing that this was going to be a record-breaking World Cup in terms of spectators, in terms of attendance, knowing the big Twickenham sellout had just happened a couple of days previous. And even you just mentioned Ilona Maher there, kind of like forgotten that factor going into that game because she's so inextricably linked with the Sevens. And last year, you throw that into the mix last Friday as well from a United States standpoint. How amazing was that evening?
Oh, it's almost indescribable because I think there was no way to prepare yourself for what it was going to look like. Yes, you knew there was going to be a record-breaking crowd there for a Women's World Cup match. You knew the atmosphere was going to be electric, but it started long before the game. The fan villages were packed out. The fans were out and about in Sunderland from sort of like midday. And you're talking about the game being at 7 p.m. There was so much time to just be, everyone was around each other, really good spirits. And then it was constant noise in that stadium. Just everybody, whether you were a USA Eagles fan or Red Roses fan or just a nation there watching, because it was really mixed in terms of audience. Everyone was just having the best time is the only way I can really describe it. It was just that sort of electric, happy, everyone is here for the better of the game. A lot of people that were there probably watched it for a long time waiting for these moments. And then, like you say, the numbers come out this week of records being broken after records being broken, whether it's attendance in the crowds or viewerships across different countries. So yeah, it's just been this really brilliant feeling, and I wish the tournament was longer than 6 weeks.
I know. I wonder, do you wish that there were games midweek as well?
I think you'd risk a lot more injuries, wouldn't you? But
True. Absolutely,
if I could do Wednesday games like a Lions tour, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, it does kind of elongate the whole thing when you do have a couple of midweek games. It just feels a bit longer, feels a bit more full. But then I guess you sacrifice maybe the incredible attendance numbers that we're going to get week in, week out. When I said at the start of this that it seems to be a three-horse race between England, Canada, New Zealand, is that about right?
Yeah, I think I'd put Australia in there because you just never know. They've had a couple of injuries coming into the tournament, so potentially they're not quite as strong as we were expecting them to be. But again, those four teams have always dominated the top four. France is also in there. They're a really strong side. They have struggled to beat the Red Roses, but they came very close in the Six Nations this year. So the door's kind of open for anybody to walk through if they can turn up on the day. If I dream out a scenario at the final for the better of the game, I think there would be a benefit to the USA being one of those final four because they're playing both matches on the same day, the third place playoff and obviously the final. But that would just bring in a much bigger global reach to the sport. But kind of thinking with your head, I can see it being a Red Roses New Zealand final with a Australia-Canada third place playoff.
It is fascinating to consider the possibility of the United States in the women's game because it seems to have been a case where so many attempts have been made on the men's side of things to just try and encourage greater American participation, a greater standard from the United States, and a lot of the attempts have failed. And look, I know there's, you know, a new suggestion that maybe a couple of USA franchises could join the URC in men's rugby, and maybe that'll be the kickstart it needs. But it feels like we've been having this conversation again and again and again. Whereas on the women's side of things, you talk realistically about the USA potentially making the last four. So they have an unbelievably strong team. They have the most recognisable face in rugby / women's rugby at the moment globally. Pushing this on and actually making this a thing in the United States and encouraging the development of the women's game over there, it could be really unique to the women's game in a way that it can't seem to be right now for the men's game.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see the USA men's team breaking into that top sort of 8-10 teams anytime soon, because there's just so much heritage in other nations, and the USA have never really focused on rugby. But I think, like you say, for the women's game, there is opportunity for that to happen, because there's space in the game that they don't have American football for women over there. So there's all of these women that will want or like to play contact sport that don't have another option. And this is their option. So the sport inherently has a way more open pathway to bring more people in faster and grow faster. And like I think it's become quite obvious that the women's game especially doesn't have as many kind of rules around how you can grow it, because the men's game has all of this heritage and it's always been done a certain way. Social media hasn't been embraced as much on the men's side of things from a player perspective, whereas in the women's game, you see, because the audience is different, you see the players leaning into social media, obviously Ilona Maher being the big obvious one, but lots of the Red Roses are doing it too, and you've seen some of the Irish players as well really getting involved in growing the audience and growing their reach online and getting the game out there in a different way than just the expected sort of like written press that we would have used 20, 30 years ago in the men's game. So, yeah, I think the USA, they need to crack it before 2031, run the numbers right, yeah, for when the World Cup's over there. So they kind of got to get ahead of that, really.
Yeah, it's a good target to have, and lots of things are achievable in the next number of years on that front. Just on a final point, what's your general feeling about Ireland after watching them last Sunday? It feels obviously that the injuries kind of have, softened the idea that Ireland can go and win this competition or get to a final in this competition, which might have been fanciful earlier in the year anyway. But having watched that game on Sunday, there are certainly a couple of concerns with regards to their lineup, but there's enough to be hopeful in that they can cause potentially a shock at the end of this pool stage and maybe another one in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, I think, look, Ireland have always been ready and raring to go, especially as they didn't make it into the last World Cup. They have talked about that fight that's been kind of building inside them to have a real impact at this one. So I wouldn't ever rule out Ireland. But you've got players like Aoife Wafer, for example, coming back from injury, but should be on back on top form any minute. And when you've got players like that at your disposal, literally anything could happen. So I'm really eager to see her back on the pitch and see where Ireland can take it, because there's no reason why you can't get to a quarter final. And if you beat New Zealand, then you're setting yourself up straight away to get to the semis without question, really.
Victoria, great chatting to you. Should mention as well that it would be a great time for people to check out No Woman, No Try, which is still available on Prime.
It is indeed, yeah, it's still on Prime. Came out in 2022 and follows the women's game and the development of the women's game and kind of what it's like to be a female rugby player. So, yeah, that is available.
Brilliant. Victoria, good to chat to you. All the best.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster Rugby. Never stop competing.